So this text called Upadesh Sara shows the four paths of spiritual progress, the path of service, karma, the path of bhakti, love, the path of yoga, and the path of knowledge. Now the path of service and the path of love have already been addressed in the previous verses, where service is, you know, and love is both seeing God, the one Lord in the entire creation, and constantly working, and then ultimately reaching the state of quietude of mind. Through service or through love, I reduce my desires, my selfish vasanas, and when the mind becomes quiet, and the mind is ready for knowledge. So the path of service and the path of love, the love also independently can reach the highest. But when you do rituals or when you do prayers or when you go light a candle in the church or aarti in the temple, when you do it with love, then slowly that love also reaches to the highest. And then yoga and the path of knowledge we have not yet covered. We'll be covering the next few weeks. Knowledge he had briefly referred to last week, but we'll go into more detail of what is the path of knowledge. This text is a little bit advanced, so for beginners, it may take a little while to understand or get used to it, but it's a very, very practical book and takes us to the highest. So just be patient if, you know, if things don't appear very easy right in the beginning. As you keep listening, this knowledge will become clearer. Most of them have been coming for many years, so they are veterans. They know as much as I do. So, I don't have much I can teach them. So today we'll do the, what is true devotion? And how from thought I can lead to thoughtlessness? So verse number 9 on page 31. भाव शून्य सद् भाव सुस्थितिः शून्य सद् भाव सुस्थितिः भावना बलात् भक्तिरुत्तमा भावना बलात् भक्तिरुत्तमा. सो भावना बलात् विथ द थॉट विथ द स्ट्रेंथ ऑफ बलम इज strength, and bhavana means thought. So with the strength of the thought, what happens? You reach the state of thoughtlessness. Bhava shunya sat. What happens through thought, you reach thoughtlessness. And we'll talk about that in a little more detail. Those of you who are meditating will probably understand it better. And susthiti means the meditator gains firm abidance in the self, the Lord, the Om, the self, the consciousness within. So the mind which is wandering into the world in meditation, we center it into the self within. So how a thought can lead to thoughtlessness, where the mind becomes still and remains centered within the self, and that is the highest devotion. Love for God is not only loving the, you know, loving the form of Jesus or Buddha or Krishna, is not only loving him in church or temple, not only serving him like Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela, but also loving the Lord within, because we all of us have this divine presence within. So loving the Lord within and being all the time established in that knowledge, being thinking about him and all the time mind is stationed in that, is also a form of love. So let us see what is true love. True devotion is identification. Like a mother, she has total identification with the child. You know, if anything happens to the child, it's like it's happening to me. A father may not be that much, but they do also that if the child gets hurt or the child is sick, how the mother stays up all night, the father is worried. But say if it's a neighbor's child, you know, then you worry even less. And suppose it's a child, somebody and got hurt and got shot in Africa and is in the, you probably will think about him for a moment and that was in the news and you forget about it. So that to the extent that you are identifying with that, to that extent is your love. So with the, my own child, oh, it is me. Neighbor's child, and then a child in the next door, or maybe in the next part of the city or the state. So true identification with the Lord is thinking that He is me. Because the Lord, we say, is everywhere. He's there in all the trees, birds, plants, fish, all humans. So if He's in all humans, He's in me too. So I am not separate from Him. And that's what we had talked last week. He is me. So everything is in this world is the Lord, and so am I. So I am nothing but an expression of that divine presence. And the Om, or the consciousness with me, in me, is a spark of that. So that, to the extent that I identify and think myself to be one with God, to that extent is my devotion. So that is what they say, that do not think God is only in the church or temple, or He's in Bethlehem or Mecca or Kailash, but He is in my heart, and I am an expression of that divinity. So each and every one of us is that divine presence, but we don't think ourselves to be that. And I think myself to be a useless, limited creature. I have all these faults. How can I be? Maybe Jesus, yeah, or maybe Buddha, or maybe Shankaracharya or Chinmayananda, but I can't be that. Why? Because we still don't have that purity of mind. So as our mind becomes purer, to that extent, you identify and become one with that supreme creation. So now they say the thought can lead to thoughtlessness. So what happens is, in meditation, I have numerous thoughts before I sit. I'm thinking about work, a problem at work, or problem with my family, or health issues, or financial issues. But then as I sit for meditation, I follow all the steps. I relax the body. I observe the breath. I chant the mantra. So as I start chanting the name of the Lord, and any mantra I pick, slowly the mind becomes quieter and quieter. And so my thoughts, everything goes to that one thought, that is the name of God, the mantra. And then slowly I remove even the chanting of the name, and then I turn my attention to that Lord within me is me. So I am not separate. So He is me. I am that. You know, that idea should be constantly, not only during meditation, but should become understanding throughout the day, that the Lord is in me. I am not separate from Him. So the more you practice that throughout the day, the more you think about it at night before you go to bed, the more you think about it in meditation. So when you sit for meditation, that thought, I am that, or He is me, slowly that thought removes all other thoughts. Then there is no other thought except the Lord that is within me. And ultimately, even that thought has to disappear. That's why in meditation they say, whether you are chanting a mantra like Om, or chanting any mantra, or you are, ultimately, even the chanting has to disappear in silence. So that one thought, which is the chanting of the name of the Lord, or the one thought that the Lord is within me, I am that, even that thought has to disappear. As long as a thought is there, my mind is still active. So in meditation, our goal is to quieten the mind and turn it inwards, and ultimately the mind should become still and should disappear in the self. How does that happen? So they give the example of like the firewood. Like now I have a bunch of firewood and I want to light a fire. So what I do, I take a stick and light that stick, and use that stick to light all other sticks. Say it's a long stick, you know, long thin stick. So with that stick, I light all the other sticks. But ultimately the stick itself also burns in that same fire. I cannot say I'll keep that stick separate. Once it is in there, so the stick which lights all other sticks itself gets burnt, right? So that is similarly, the thought that destroys all other thoughts itself also gets destroyed, also ends. It's a little complicated subject, but as you practice that, you will find it is very beneficial. The example they give is sleep. Like I want to sleep, right? So I say I can't sleep, I can't sleep, I want to sleep, I want to sleep. As long as the thought is there, I want to sleep, I am sleepy, I am not sleepy, I am tired, I am not tired. Till then you won't fall asleep. You'll keep saying, I want to sleep, want to sleep. No, that doesn't happen. What happens is that when your mind becomes quiet and even the thought, I want to sleep, goes away, when there is no thought, then you glide into sleep. You cannot say, I am intentionally going to fall asleep. You can't do that. Nobody can intentionally fall asleep. All you can do is quieten the mind, put off the lights, and lie down and relax, and you know, and get put on your pajamas and lie down and in your bed, and then you know, just slowly quieten the mind, and then ultimately, when the mind has become quiet, the individual glides into sleep. So we do that every night. So similarly, in meditation, this one thought, that is either the chanting of the mantra or the thought that I am that, he is me, that thought, when it disappears, then the individual glides into meditation. So it's a gradual process. It's not going to happen overnight. Today you decide, okay, I'm going to start meditating. From tomorrow, my mind will be completely still. It's not going to happen. It's a gradual process. Initially, you'll have a lot of difficulty with controlling the mind. I still sometimes have a lot of problem. You know, not every day the mind can become still. It depends on how what you have done the previous day, what you have planned for this day, what your life has been. If it's very stressful, then obviously it takes longer to quieten the mind. But with practice, as you practice slowly, you are able to quieten the mind. And in that mind, then when the mind is settled within, then you experience extreme peace, extreme bliss. So they say in that, even the meditator disappears, just as the stick disappears in the fire. So I start with, I am planning to meditate. So I get up in the morning, set the alarm, 5:30 or 6, and then I sit down. And then I do all the steps one by one. And then I say, I am now relaxing my body. I am now watching my breath. I am now chanting the mantra. So I is still there. As long as the I is there, the Lord cannot manifest. They say he and I cannot be in the same place. He or she, whatever the Lord you want to worship. So when that ego, the meditator, disappears, does not mean that, sitting for meditation, you disappear and you are dead. That does not mean that people come there and say, oh, he's gone. He disappeared. That's not what the meaning is. What we mean is the ego, the individuality that says, I am meditating, that I disappears and that alone remains. The Lord alone remains. So in that silence of meditation, when even that's what they say, in deep meditation, you even lose identification with your body. You don't even know your body is there. You don't even know your breath is coming or not. Your mind, of course, is still. So that beautiful state is called samadhi or merger. So in that state, my ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker disappears, and I become one with the Lord within. So that is the final state of meditation. So that's what he's saying, that is how you practice. You go step by step, and then ultimately in that silence, you even drop your own body identification. You say that nothing exists except the Lord. So this is just a gradual stage of progress. Okay, we'll do the next one. They say that there are four paths: the path of service, the path of love, the path of yoga, and the path of knowledge. What is the goal of all four paths? The goal appears different, right? The path of service is different. The path of love is different. The path of yoga, when you do those yoga and exercises, that's different. And the path of knowledge. But here the teacher tells us that the goal of all four paths is the same. Ultimately, they all lead to one. And what is that? We'll do in verse number 10. Hritsthale mana swasthata kriya. Mana swasthata kriya. Bhakti yoga bodhascha nishchitam. Bodhascha Nishchitam. So, Kriya, Bhakti, Yoga and Bodha. So, Kriya is the path of service. Bhakti is the path of love. So, one is you serve the world as the Lord Himself. One is you love Lord. Then the third is Yoga, where you do those exercises, pranayama, breathing and, you know, doing all those. And the fourth is Bodha. Bodha means knowledge. So, Nishchitam. Nishchitam means it has been determined. It has been decided. It has been confirmed by who? By the great sages. The great masters who wrote these texts or who wrote all the scriptures like Bible or Gita or Quran or the Vedas. So, all the great masters who wrote all the great scriptures, they have said that the goal of all four is what? Hritsthale mana swasthata kriya. So, hrit means the mind. Mana is the mind established in the self. Hrit here means heart. So, the mind established in the heart. So, when we think of heart, it's not the pumping heart. You know, the pumping heart is called heart, where it has the auricle and ventricle, atrium and all that. But in spirituality, when they say the word hrit or heart, what they mean is the core or essence of my personality. That means in my mind, where the Lord resides. Where does the Lord reside in my mind? Where there are good qualities. A mind that is full of love, kindness, compassion, service, unselfishness. So, such a mind where such qualities are there, that is where, that is called Hrit. So, Hrit is the core of my personality where the Lord resides. And so, mind established in the self. So, the self is where, self does not mean the little s, but the self means the Lord within the consciousness. So, Hritsthale mana swasthata kriya. So, the mind stationed in the heart. As we said, heart is not the pumping heart. Heart is the core or the essence of my personality where all the good qualities reside. And that is where the Lord is. Talking about heart, this lady told her friend, you know, my husband got a heart attack and got admitted to the hospital. She said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. She says, my kids sent him flowers. So the friend said, that's very nice. The kids sent him flowers. What did you send him? She said, I sent him a large pepperoni pizza with extra cheese. A lot of women are saying, yeah, I should do that too. Anyway, so heart here, as I said, means the core of my personality.
Could we say it's the soul?
Yeah, you can call it the soul, yes. The Lord's presence. Yeah, the soul is equal. There are many words for that, but that's true. That's also the same. So here we call it as Om. That's why I say Om, sweet Om. You know, we say home, sweet home. But I need, just as when I'm tired and I've worked all day and I've been so busy and dealt with the world and I have all kinds of stress and my mind is upset and angry, then I come home, I feel so good. Can take off my shoes, you know, put on my pajamas, and then put my feet up, you know, on the couch and relax and watch TV or, you know, or have a dinner or something. So how I feel so calm and peaceful and happy when I come home. So similarly, they say that when your mind, which has been running extrovertly out into the world, you know, here, there, looking and wanting, but when that mind becomes quiet and comes and rests in within its true home, which is the Lord, which is Om. So the mind that is running outward, when it is stationed within the Lord's presence, the self, then it gets a lot of peace. That's why when we sit for meditation, when your mind becomes real quiet, you must have noticed, you feel a lot of peace, you feel a lot of bliss, you feel joy, you feel happiness. So that's why we say Om, sweet Om. So the mind is, when it comes back home, it feels happy, it feels peaceful. So that's why the goal of meditation is to quieten the mind and turn it inwards. Similarly, whether I'm serving the Lord or living or loving the Lord, or even when we do yoga, you know, when you, those of you who come for the yoga classes on Tuesday or Sunday, at the end of the class, they make you lie down and relax. So the idea being that in that quietude, you, when your mind is still, you go inward to the Lord's presence. And also in the path of knowledge, what we are studying here today, the path of knowledge also says the Lord is within. So the mind which is stationed in the self or established in the self, that's why they say swastha. Swastha means one is entrenched or established. So the mind is not only in meditation, but a wise person, a realized master, constantly 24 hours a day stays in that state, no matter what they are doing. What a wise person or a realized master may be working, or maybe, you know, in the bus, or maybe sitting in a train, or just sitting on by the beach, or working hard, you know, at wherever the person works, maybe giving talks or maybe traveling. But he or she knows that the BMI is working, the body, mind and intellect is working, but he is established in the self. He says, I am the self. I am that consciousness. I am that soul. I am that consciousness. This body, mind and intellect is my equipment, is a cloth that I am wearing. So he says the body, mind is working, and body may be working. He may be even working in the fields, you know, doing heavy work in the hot sun. And we find some, you know, some masters were workers, you know, like Jesus was a carpenter. So he used to be working as, I'm sure, as a carpenter. When he's doing that, his mind is always on the Father in heaven. Mind is never away from that. Our teacher, Swami Chinmayananda, used to work 20, 21 hours a day, the founder. So he was all the time traveling, talking to people, worrying, you know, working about the organization of the mission, setting up new centers, writing books, you know, and all that. But his mind was always in that om, in that self. So that's what they say. The mind is entrenched or established in the self. His body, mind, and intellect may be working, but he's never far away from the truth. That's what they say. Once you have woken up and realized that the Lord is within me, and once you have experienced that in your meditation, then that becomes a constant companion. Then the Lord never leaves such a person. You and I, what happens to us, you know, we think about God in the morning when we wake up, or when we are in the prayer room, or when we are in meditation. But as we go to work, we forget. Then we get so established, in the, so worried about the work, and we are fighting with people and having problems, family problems, work problems. So the mind does not stay in the self. But if from time to time you can remind yourself that I am that and the Lord is within, then no matter what kind of problems come, such an individual can handle them. That's why Jesus was fine even when they were crucifying him. We find in the lives of these great saints, even when they were being tortured or they were being, you know, mistreated, they were established in the truth. Why? Because they said, I am the self, I am the soul, I am the spirit, I am not this body. You can torture my body, but you cannot kill me. So that has to become nishchitam, that has to become firm. Swastha also means no disease. See, swastha means healthy. No disease. Dis-ease. What is this disease? When I am at ease, and when the ease is gone, then you say, I have dis-ease. Right? Dis-ease. That is disease. Is what? I am not at ease. So, swastha means there is no disease. That means my mind, in that silence of meditation, has no anger, no jealousy, no greed, no hatred. These are the diseases of the mind. Just as the body has disease like pneumonia or appendicitis or stroke or heart attack or whatever, the body has physical illnesses. So the mind also has diseases like anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, selfishness, arrogance, looking down on others, you know, falsehood, pretentiousness. So when if you deal with the life of a saint, you find that they don't have any of these. They don't have any anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, arrogance. So when I can develop those qualities in my mind, then my mind is healthy. My mind is free of anger, free of jealousy, free of greed, free of hatred, loves all. I accept everybody as they are. I do not judge people. I do not try to change people. I accept them with love as they are. And I'm so what happens is a mind that is has no disease, that is has no impurities, such a mind, it is easier to stay in the self. But if I have a lot of jealousy, then how can I, you know, my meditation be peaceful? No, because I'm jealous of my neighbor. You know, he has a bigger car, or he has a bigger house, or somebody at work has a bigger diamond. You know, all those things. So if I have jealousy, if I have anger, if I have hatred, then my mind can never be still. So a mind that is freed from all these negativities, such a mind is peaceful, has no disease, is swastha, and such a mind can very easily be quietened in meditation. That's why we say meditation is not only done 20 minutes or half an hour, but throughout the day I have to see how I am living my life, how I am reducing my impurities, how I am reducing my anger, how when anger comes or when, you know, hatred comes, or I develop compassion, I develop love, I share, I become unselfish. So the more I practice these qualities throughout the day, the quieter my mind becomes. So meditation is not only 20 minutes or half an hour, but I have to change the way I deal with the world. That is 24 hours. When somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, how long should we meditate? He said 24 hours a day. So he could have said half an hour or 20 minutes or an hour. No, 24 hours a day. How you live your life throughout the day will determine the quality of your meditation. So that is what he's saying, that the goal of all of them is to quieten the mind, make it peaceful, make it free from the negativities, and then station it in the self. These are two beautiful verses, need a lot of thinking. So please read them again if you have the book. Also, you can, as I've told you, you can go to firstpower.info and listen to these talks again, because this material is not very easy to digest. Even for me to explain this, I had to read it 3-4 times and think about it. So it's not easy subject. And so if it's not clear, don't get, you know, disheartened. It will become clear as you keep listening. Any comments, any questions?
Like when you meditate, and as you years go by, months go by, as you meditate, you also have to learn that maybe I'm wrong, to learn how to clean your mind, right?
Yes.
To make it pure.
Right.
To get a better meditation.
Yes. Right.
When you're constantly not thinking right, you can't really meditate, right?
Absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. So how, what you do throughout the day will affect your meditation. If you had a lot of anger and jealousy and fighting and competing, you know, the fight and flight. But if you have dealt with people with love, compassion, kindness, and also they say that when you're even doing your activity, do it slow, do it deliberately, you know, without rushing. Try to slow down your life, you know, don't overwork, don't over, you know, but try to do what is necessary, avoid unnecessary work, avoid unnecessary thinking, unnecessary talking. So the less you do throughout the day, the quieter your mind becomes. It becomes easier to meditate. And also as you purify your mind, like you said, remove anger, remove jealousy, greed. As your mind becomes purer, it is easier to stay quiet.
I don't bring work home anymore.
Uh-huh, good.
I tell everybody, I just take my jacket off and I leave it there, so there's always tomorrow.
Right. That's true. Because if you bring work home and spend an hour or two at work, then obviously, but when you come home, if you relax, right, and, you know, and then maybe read a good book or something instead of just, you know, watching TV, especially at night before you go to bed, read some good books, you know, think about some good thoughts, listen to some good CDs. So your mind is quiet. Then when you wake up in the morning, your meditation is better. So you have to plan for your meditation from the night before. If you watch the 11 o'clock news, that's the worst thing you can do. But that's full of violence and, you know, hatred and, you know, or who killed who murdered who. We don't want to know all that. It's okay to be in touch with the news a little bit, but not constantly.
Not at night.
Not at night, yes. Because that's the same thought will play in your mind all night.
Just go and do something else and then go with awareness. or the physical activity instead of doing the spiritual.
And then maybe after doing that, then maybe you could try again if you have some time.
Or,
you know, because meditation in the beginning, the mind will run. So with practice, you can bring it.
I start now, my routine is like first do yoga, then I do.
Right, yeah, that's fine too. If you do yoga first, that helps.
Yoga, and then the yoga
leads to meditation.
Leads to meditation.
So yoga is not the final. Yoga should lead to meditation.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's good.
So even for a couple of minutes or even a few minutes, but I have the yoga, then my mind.
Now we have yoga classes on Tuesday and Sunday, if those who are interested. Tuesday evening and then Sunday morning.
No, you can't. So now I don't drink my coffee when I meditate. I don't even want to make my coffee until after I meditate.
Yeah.
I'm thinking your mind has to be
still. Right. Not only that, but the caffeine stimulates the mind.
Yeah.
So don't have caffeine before you meditate, because caffeine will get your mind racing. So if you want to have coffee, do it after the meditation. And also limit the amount of caffeine you take during the day. If you drink too much caffeine, that also is... In fact, I used to drink a lot, and then Swamiji, Swami Ishwarananda, who is our teacher, he told me to cut down. And at one stage, I was 7 or 8 times a day, I was drinking caffeine. Now, then one day, I just cut it down to 0. I just quit cold turkey. We were at a retreat, and I didn't have any tea or coffee, and then I just quit it. And after that, I haven't had any. I don't feel the need for caffeine. It's just also is a habit that, you know, you develop. And it's okay. 1 or 2 cups is all right, but too much caffeine is not good. And that's why my mind used to be always racing. But since I've stopped caffeine, it has helped. It's been a few years now. Any of these stimulants, you know, they are all, they make the mind race. You know, a little bit is okay. Tea, 1 cup or a couple of times a day is not bad, or coffee, but not too much.